You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. The following program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cane5.com.
All right, it's another Thursday, 1 o'clock, and you are tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. You're listening to the Farm Report, coming to you live from the back of Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Want to give a quick shout-out to my producer, Jack, for those fat beats on that last ad. You want to hear more of that, tune into his show Wednesday nights. But today, we are live in studio with David Sherman of Grow NYC. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Erin.
So, David, you are a market manager for Grow NYC, and then you also work with their youth education project?
That's correct.
Awesome. So, how did you get into that? I mean, you're a young guy. What, you graduated from college, and then you applied to Green Markets, or how did it, what was the transition like for you?
Yeah, actually, I was part of a Friends World program at Long Island University, and my first day there, I met Scott Chasky from Quail Hill Farm. I think I was eating Lucky Charms when I met him.
Awesome.
Which I always remember fondly because he's really changed my diet more than anybody else.
So you don't eat Lucky Charms anymore? I mean, it's okay if you do. I'm just asking.
I don't really. No, not really anymore, no? To be honest.
But okay.
I would eat them if you had some right now.
I eat just the marshmallows.
Yeah, that's probably what I would do as well.
So you're hanging out, you're eating Lucky Charms, and...
So yeah, he invites me to come take a agriculture and ecology course over at Quail Hill Farm in Montauk, Long Island. So yeah, I started going once a week. And he turned me on to the joys of farming, as well as the social, economic, political, environmental connection that agriculture, food has for our world. And I was just turned completely around. I was really interested in music and art. And I just decided that, you know, the sustainable ag movement was...
Something you wanted to be a part of.
Yeah, that I needed to be a part of, because it connected so many things for me.
Okay, so when you make that transition, I think as a lot of people do, where they're going on one path and then they get introduced to an amazing product or an amazing person who really opens up the world of food and what that can mean for them. And often you find yourself with this question, I know I did, of like, all right, well, I want to work in food, but what exactly does that mean and what kind of jobs are out there? So you work as a market manager. Was that kind of your first choice, or how did you end up in that position?
Yeah, I think I have a similar conflict as maybe many folks, you know, here in Brooklyn and in cities who want to be connected with agriculture, don't have that background, and, you know, need Chinese food at midnight sometimes. So I did try my hand at working at farms. I was in Costa Rica working on a farm, co-op, with All Women Co-op, just outside the capital. I ended up living with a farmer activist in India for a while. Completely lost it being in the country for so long.
All right.
Not completely lost it. Sorry, that's dramatic. But
it felt dramatic. It was my life.
Yes.
And I was lonely in the country, in India. I get it.
Yeah. There's a lot of stars, but it was very, you know. So I realized that maybe rural life wasn't necessarily my calling. But I ended up working at Denver Urban Gardens in Denver, Delancey Farm. They have a 3-acre farm on historic farmland. In Aurora, Colorado, and I was the assistant farm manager there for almost 3 seasons.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that was really amazing, putting my farm practices to work and learning so much about what it takes to run even that size farm. We had a CSA, as well as a lot of amazing community work that we were involved with, working with Somali Bantu refugees. As well as WIC program and doing a lot of education stuff, and getting, you know, kids involved and, you know, the greater community involved in this project.
So then your transition to market manager must have been pretty natural in that you kind of already spoke the language of farming. You're also kind of experienced in community development and looking at communities and kind of figuring out from both ends, like how to meet needs on both sides. How did you end up with Grow NYC?
Yeah, well, the story that's on my bio for Grow NYC is that I couldn't find a good bagel in Colorado, which is sort of true. No, but you know, I'm not from Colorado, and so I came back out east. And yeah, you know, Grow NYC Green Market seemed like a really interesting opportunity because I am maybe more natural at speaking about sustainable ag and farming practices and different, you know, need for food security and things. And I'm more, hopefully not doing a very good job right now, but.
Oh, come on. You're doing great.
No, I'm just no, but being, you know, I have a propensity more to, you know, to get the greater community involved, I think more than, always having my hands dirty. So it was a natural move for me. And, you know, as a market manager, I'm just happy to be someone there who can be a spokesperson and remind people every day, you know, that the food there, buying and putting in their bodies has, you know, a greater effect than just on their taste buds for the moment.
Yeah, sure. And I know that if you visit the website www.grownyc.org, every spring, more or less, you know, they are looking to hire market managers. So it is a seasonal position, but do you work with them just through the summer, or are you working with them year round?
Yeah, I've actually worked year round. I think this is my second winter working year round. Winter markets are they're tough. They're another beast, you know. Right now it's like too hot, and but there's so much amazing produce. Everybody's out. It's amazing. Winter markets are a whole nother trip.
A whole nother story.
Yeah. But yeah, every spring, it's probably around April when people can start checking out if they're interested in becoming a market manager.
So you took on that position. Let's kind of talk a little bit about the nuts and bolts of what a market manager actually does. So you work at a couple of different markets. What are your markets?
Yeah, currently I am Union Square Green Market, but I also want to say that I am also the market manager at the new Williamsburg Waterfront Green Market at the Smorgasburg at the Williamsburg Waterfront every Saturday.
Every Saturday. So that market's on Saturday, and then the Union Square Market happens Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, right?
True.
Okay, so you have a pretty full week. So let's pick a Monday, right? Beginning of the week. What happened? Like, you show up, what time, what are you doing? What, walk us through your day a little bit.
Yeah, Union Square is another beast from maybe a neighborhood market, but you show up early. You know, the farmers.
How early is early?
For me, at Union Square, actually, I get to show up at 7.
That's late for the market.
That's
though.
Pretty late, yeah. I want to say hi to Jamie. Thanks for coming earlier.
he's your fellow market manager at Union Square.
He is.
What time does he show up?
He probably shows up a good like quarter to six, maybe even 5:30.
Okay.
He is helping to delineate space, mm-hmm. measurements, and again, space is dictated by working with the parks to make sure that we are keeping things, you know, safe and efficient and making it a nice place to be.
So like within the boundaries, they say, okay, you're at this park, this public space, the market can go from like X point to Y point. And then it's your job to say, okay, farmer one, you get this spot. Farmer two, you get this spot. That's what you mean, right?
Like, yeah, delineating. Definitely. Yeah, coordinating that, making sure, that everyone's getting the space they need. Every farmer, you know, depending on the size of their farm and time of the year and things, they have different space that they take up. So every week you're sort of looking at what you got, what you have, and how you can fit it. And there's always just certain factors like wheelchair access or entrances to parks or manhole covers that you always have to take into account as well.
So I've definitely been at markets pretty early, and I feel like I've seen people kind of walking around with the little chalk roller to mark out. So if you're a farm and let's say, like, what are the things that change them that sometimes you need a stall that's this big and then another time you need a stall that's, you know, twice that size? Like, what, how are those decisions getting made, or like what's happening that makes them require more space?
Yeah, hopefully it's the bounty of spring and summertime, even fall. You know, for example, I can think of Wilco Orchards. I had a farmer, Fred and Albert, and, you know, they show up all winter long at the Brooklyn Borough Hall Green Market, as well as the Fort Greene Farmers Market, or Green Market. And they, you know, during the winter, they might have about 20 feet tops. It's just apples. But as the spring comes along and they get rhubarb and berries and then later tomatoes, the span just keeps growing. The stand keeps growing and
getting
growing.
Bigger and bigger. Yeah, so you expand. So you're at the market. You kind of delineated space. All the farmers are there, unpacked. The market's going. then what are you doing? I mean, how much longer are you there during the day? What's your role look like?
Well, my favorite part about the whole role is actually doing event and promotion at the market. We always have amazing cooking demos using the seasonal produce, hopefully opening people's eyes to ways of cooking, to the joys of cooking, and using new products they may have not seen before.
So you're actually cooking right at the market.
Yeah, I'm proud to say that I have gotten many Brooklynites eating kale on a regular basis.
Nice.
One of the few things that I find, you know, very valuable that I've done on this earth.
You're like creating a little Popeyes all throughout Brooklyn.
Yeah, definitely.
I guess Popeye ain't spinach, but kale seems like a very powerful vegetable too.
I think that's like the Popeye of the 21st century is going to be kale.
You heard it here first on the Heritage Radio Network. Kale, vegetable of the next century. So you set up cooking demos. So that's like kind of, that's happening during the market, but that also happens in your off time where you're kind of contacting people to come in or deciding which farmers to work with. And then you actually run the demo at the market?
Yeah, random. So we do operations, which would be like setting up the market. We have a lot of rules for the farmers to follow, but most are for safety, for customer support, knowing what you're buying, as well as, you know, farmer support, also meeting health codes and things is a very important aspect of the job, which is, you know, is so necessary. But then when we get to the promotions is where I'm really having a good time. And cooking demos, we just had an amazing event at the Williamsburg Waterfront Green Market. Hot Bread Kitchen came and they did handmade tortillas.
Oh, I love their stuff. They do that flatbread, that like...
Smem.
Smem, I know. I always just say, the flatbread, please, because I'm scared to pronounce it. But they are at Smorgas, and they're also at Union Square on Wednesdays, I think?
Yeah, Wednesdays. There are a lot of great markets, and you can check that where they are on their website, which is hotbreadkitchen.org.
Awesome.
Yeah, they came, they brought a bicycle grinder, and which they actually used to use to make these tortillas, and then which I got to pedal, and we ground maize from Cayuga Pure Organics Farm, which is what they use in their product. And
okay.
Yeah, again, just bringing people over, letting them know about a Hot Bread Kitchen. And then, you know, this week we'll be playing Jeopardy, which is, you know, farmy Jeopardy. Call it Jeopardy. yeah, just keeping it fun and lively and reminding people, you know, why we're there, that it's not just another stand or another person trying to sell you something, but something really special and something where you're supporting something greater.
So kind of doing your part to tell the farmer's story. I mean, and I think that's the thing about farmers markets that people often speak to. I know we had Scott Stringer on the show a few weeks ago, kind of talking about in a community, like what the role of the market can be. It's a place that you can buy your food, but it's also a place for people to come and get educated, to commune with their neighbors, to kind of make some upstate downstate connections. And, you know, the Grow NYC staff really works to facilitate that by creating kind of these spaces within the market, whether it's the manager's tent or the demo tent, where people can kind of go and ask questions and find out what's new and what's going on. And I know the Williamsburg Waterfront Market is a little bit of a different model for you guys. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, we're actually partnering with the Brooklyn Flea, and they're running the Smorgasburg, which has a plethora, a smorgasburg of hot prepared foods, different stands coming in, some you may know, some that you may not know. And then within there we have, and within that really nice food market, we have a green market. We have right now five of our producers, including the Brooklyn Grange Rooftop Farm from Long Island City.
Oh, we are familiar with the Brooklyn Grange. They've been on the show many of times.
Yeah, we're at Roberta, so, you know, they're the same peoples. Or good people. Hot Bread Kitchen is there, a nonprofit bakery where you are supporting their cause just by eating amazing bread products and bakery up in East Harlem. Best Farm Kitchen is there. Jams, chutneys, and jellies. And I think it's exciting to have her there because there's all these young, new, sort of independent food professionals at the Smorgasburg. And Beth's been doing it for almost 25 years.
So she's old school. She's like, jam ain't nothing new, sister.
And using local product and having sort of an independent business, which is really exciting to see all these people doing it at the Smorgasburg. But it's nice to see her kind of, because I think she should get her due for being a pioneer in that aspect. Yeah.
Well, and again, it's like what we were talking about earlier, is creating this space where people kind of across the spectrum can intermingle and learn from each other. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about some extreme weather stories from the farmer's market. I like to sit on my stoop, feel the sun on my skin. I hope the day never ends. That's exactly how I feel about you. We're back, and you are tuned into the Farm Report. We are in studio with David Sherman, market manager for Grow NYC, who also works with their youth education project. So before the break, we were talking a little bit about the new market over in Williamsburg that you've been working with. And I want to kind of talk more generally about your role as a market manager. And what are some kind of, do you have any kind of funny stories for us or troubleshooting? I mean, sure, as you know, the year goes round that things come up. And I think our listeners would love to know kind of what are some of the problems or situations that you found yourself in and are going, I can't believe this is my job, or I can't believe that happened, or, oh my gosh, like, what are we going to do?
Yeah, definitely. It's a funny thing to roll, to come up to your to a market space at, you know, 5:30, 6 in the morning and find that they're doing, you know, construction. And you had no idea. and trying to work that out, and you have a fleet of trucks coming in any moment. Those things happen all the time. Other things like weather can be pretty intense. I was snow blowing at Fort Greene this winter a lot. Really, I shoveled a lot this winter.
Yeah.
Yeah, dag. I should be getting paid by the city as well, I think. I'm going to service everybody. But of course, I'm happy to do it for the farmer's market.
And yeah.
Yeah, and the heat can be intense. I mean, we're just trying to keep things, keep people cool and keep our customers happy in the heat. At Union Square, it's mostly just dealing with a lot of people.
Yeah.
All kinds of people constantly. There's always, you know, somebody's going on about something.
Yeah, everyone's always got a story to tell. I know I've definitely worked I did a cooking demo there a few months ago, and I think there's always somebody coming by telling you a story.
Yeah.
Lots of characters. That's cool. So what about, can you tell us a little bit more about the youth education project and so what your role is with that and kind of how that fits into the Grow NYC kind of collection of activities?
Yeah, it's definitely part of Green Market, and we, have school groups coming into the market at least almost 3 days a week, almost year round. We're trying, and coming in to the market, learning about what a farmer's market is, why this food is special, what's important about it, learning about concepts like food mileage, learning about things like where is that tomato coming from that's at your grocery store compared to where it is at the market. At the end of the day, really just trying to ingrain that, you know, a farmer's market is a really fun, amazing place, and connecting them with their food.
So it's like school tours. So like you're walking around the market with a group of like 10, 15 kids going
sometimes 30.
Woo!
Yeah, it's intense in Union Square. We walk through the market, introduce them to farmers, introduce them to, amazing fruits and vegetables that they've never seen before. It ranges though, you know, it ranges from, you know, discussing the finer points of farmer growing practices to just showing certain students asparagus for the first time.
Yeah. And then there's like, I know, you know, just walking through the Union Square Market in particular, there's like so many vegetables, I think, that are unfamiliar to most adults, much less kids. I mean, you mentioned asparagus. Is there anything else that you show the kids and they're like, whoa, I didn't know it looked like that? Or
yeah, definitely. Purple carrots is a big hit.
Yeah.
And I kind of know the history of that, which, you know, is that purple is the more original color of carrots. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was amazing. I think it was the Dutch.
the Dutch that was like the Earl of Orange or something. I was like, I want my carrots to be orange.
He probably was like, so you know, that's really fun. We had some older, you know, we had even high school seniors coming in the other week and just showing them the variety of tomatoes, letting them taste them, touch them, meet the farmer who grew them. Just, you know, they probably haven't thought this much about their food, maybe ever. And so it's exciting, and they, you know, they really enjoy it. Other amazing things, you know, that they actually like, you know, we try to do some cooking demos with them, and that can always be a big eye-opener. Some kids are afraid to eat a blueberry. I mean, you know, you can hand out kid a candy bar and a wrapper, they're going to eat it, but it's and it depends on, the kids and their upbringing, but it can be anywhere from just, like, the simplest thing sometimes, even an orange carrot might be shocking.
Wow. Cool. Well, I mean, that's great. And do you end up seeing some of those kids coming back to the market on their own or with their parents, or, you know, do you get to check back in with them from year to year, or is it like
I've definitely seen kids come back with their parents a few times, especially at my, the downtown Brooklyn market, Brooklyn Borough Hall Green Market. It's really nice. At Union Square, you know, the kids are coming from different neighborhoods so often, so I don't necessarily, get to see them. But hopefully they're going to their neighborhood markets. And again, I think, you know, it's just the start of just planting seeds in their head. You know, every time I see like a parent with their child, or we give a kid a sugar snap pea, mm-hmm. I know that maybe they'll forget about it, but I feel like in 10 years they're going to be walking through a farmer's market and they'll go, those are good. I remember that. I remember how good those were. And, and really opened up to the idea of shopping at an outdoor market, a farmer's market.
Yeah.
Eating vegetables.
Yeah, you had mentioned kind of when you were first kind of getting into the food scene that you were eating a bowl of Lucky Charms. I mean, was there a transitional fruit or vegetable or food for you, or something that you can remember as an adult tasting for the first time and being like, man, what have I been doing all these years?
Yeah, actually, it was Lucky Charms with soy milk.
Ah, okay. Which is even weirder. To clarify.
Super weird. I don't know. I guess potato harvesting was a really profound day for me. That was a really beautiful thing at Quail Hill Farm. And then we actually, and I would recommend this to anyone who's in school right now, we actually lobbied our school administrators to let us have some of our meal card budget that we pay for and use it to invest in a CSA in Long Island. Yeah, and so we ended up taking that money that, I also found out that the food distributor who's running our school's kitchen was also the same ones who do it at the same company that does the food at Attica.
Okay.
Prison. So, sure. We spoke with them. We said, hey, we're learning all these amazing things about food, and this doesn't really align with the values that we're trying to, that we're continually learning about and passionate about. So they actually were really nice, and we were able to, have a nice, and so, you know, having a CSA box come in, having people around me to show me, what to do with kale, what to do with these vegetables is really, I'm really lucky. You know, I don't think I understand when people, like my friends who eat deli sandwiches every day, because that could have been me had a few opportunities.
Had you not had those. Yeah. So, and it sounds like, I mean, you have had a pretty entrepreneurial path in the food world, kind of going from really interesting experience, you know, one to the next. And I'm wondering, you know, we talk a lot on the show about opportunities for urban residents to get engaged with the food system. And obviously you've been able to share some of your path, but I'm kind of curious, like, have you in your role as market manager run into things where you're like, man, I wish I had someone who I could call who could help me with this problem. You know, maybe it's not, you know, working the market, or maybe it's not working on the farm, but what are kind of some other opportunities for people to engage with the food system that you've seen a need for?
I think shopping is really what everyone needs to do. I had someone come up to me at the Brooklyn Grange stand and ask how to volunteer, and I said, you know, the best thing you could do is buy some tomatoes before they get packed back up in the van, and you know,
have to get
whatever, maybe composted, or hopefully someone eats them. But yeah, you know, I think a lot of people are like, love the idea of a farmer's market, love the idea of CSAs, but you just need them to take the plunge. You need to,
put your money where your mouth is.
Mouth where your money is. And it doesn't, you know, I really want to hopefully spend more time working on ways for young people, artists, to make it possible and really open them up to, you know, knowing that they can, you could just fill up a bag from the farmer's market. It doesn't have to be that expensive. It doesn't take much, and you can make some really simple meals. It's not as hard as everyone wants to make.
Sure, and you don't have to. It doesn't have to be your whole week's worth of groceries. You know, making the commitment to come to the market and buy one thing. I mean, that's a step that people can take. And I know, like you personally, you're embarking on some new projects, kind of looking to transition some of the stuff you've learned in food into some other areas as far as consumption goes. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, right now I'm working on a fund for the Jillian Lanier Fund. My friend Jillian, passed away this year, and she was an amazing clothing designer, homegrown, handmade fashion that she herself designed and created. And knowing and living with her, and watching her line grow, I realized there's such a correlation between buying local sustainable food and buying local, fashion as well. Where there's no factory farm, there's no sweatshop, and when you're paying a little extra, but you're getting something extra and something special, getting something unique, putting money back into your community. I just see this correlation, and I'm really trying to maybe bridge that gap, but also the fund will be a way to celebrate buying all sorts of local. We're going to have an event the second week of September at the Tip Top Bar and Grill in Bed-Stuy in Franklin. And the whole concept behind that was that I know Junior, the owner.
Okay.
So we're going to, if people are going to buy cocktails and beer, let's give it back to Junior, and whose son has been part of the community for so long. And let's have people there who are selling clothes that they made, and you're giving money directly to someone who then may buy your CD or come to Roberta's and eat their pizza with that money.
Right. So you're kind of creating, expanding on this idea of buy local and keep your dollars in the local community. It's something you hear a lot around food and thinking about that more broadly, looking at fashion or music. And I think there has been, obviously in Brooklyn, tons of movement towards these more collaborative venues for people to kind of purchase locally. I mean, I think the Smorgas Market is a great example of that, like bringing a diverse group of people together that are all kind of falling under a similar mission.
Yeah, and you're definitely supporting a lot of really amazing people directly by, shopping at the farmers, at the Green Market. Yeah, the Smorgasburg vendors as well, for the most part. And hopefully, maybe the goal of the Jillian Fund at some point will be to have a farmers market pop-up store where you can maybe buy some like handmade...
Buy the bag to put your groceries in.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you're dressed the way to the farmers market next week or something.
And how can people find more about the fund? Do you guys have a website or...
That will be coming up. Please check. You can definitely stay in touch with the fund on Facebook. It's Jillian Lanier Designs. Is on Facebook. You can like it, and then we'll let you know more about what's happening.
Awesome. And also, while you're on Facebook, don't forget to like the Grow NYC or follow them on Twitter if you want to be updated on what's happening at the market. Check them out at www.grownyc.org. David, thank you so much for coming in today. It was great to have you on the show. I always love chatting with the Grow NYC folks. You guys have got so much going on. Next week, we have Christopher Nicholson in-house talking about this year's wild sockeye salmon season up in Bristol Bay, Alaska. So tune in next week at 1 o'clock.
Cool. See you at the market, Aaron.
Awesome. Thanks, Dave.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. The long-awaited documentary The Vanishing of the Bees will be screening in Astoria, Queens at the Broadway branch of the Queens Public Library on Monday, September 19th. I know that seems like a long ways away, but it isn't. It will be broadcast from 6 to 8 p.m. More information about this fascinating look at bee life and colony collapse disorder can be found at their website at www.vanishingbees.com. I also wanted to add that the producers are all working on a 30-minute educational video for high school students, so any parent or teacher should check out the site to see what he or she can do to work with the team to bring this into a school curriculum. The film has a Facebook page as well that discusses current events that affect bees. This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Every spring at the end of kidding season, goat dairies across the country are faced with the question of what to do with their male bucklings. Because on a dairy farm, there's no role for a male. Often the most economical thing for these farmers to do is to cull the animals at birth or ship them off to the commodity market. Heritage Foods USA is embarking on a new project, No Goat Left Behind, looking to step in and fill this niche by creating a marketplace for these male bucklings. Visit us at www.heritagefoodsusa.com to learn more and to reserve your goat this coming October.